not what I want.
Hey, guys.
All right, everyone. It's the Grim Lord here, and this is the Grim Rancho. I've got Dead Penetration.
What's up?
Sorry, we have not been around lately. Shit happens. Life happens. And basically, I've got some articles. Don't have a lot of battery power here on this phone right now, so I don't know. I'm sure we'll be okay. But anyway, let's go right into my news for show and check out what we got going on. So first of all, there is some interesting things. Where should we even start? Because so much bullshit has happened. We'll start from the top and go... We'll start from the bottom and go to the top. So we'll go from the latest news down to stuff that maybe might not be as recent, but still worth talking about. All right, so we've got something for you anime fans. Of course, we do Grim Sentai Corner. So, you know, anime is kind of a part. I grew up with anime. But this is more about preservation. An incalculable loss. Thousands of classic anime are close to being lost forever. Tokyo Laboratory's impending shutdown threatens the destruction of countless master reels, which would be a painful blow to media preservation. The film editing company Tokyo Laboratory is facing a crisis. When it shuts its doors in November, its many unclaimed anime masters will be destroyed, resulting in thousands of classic anime being lost forever. With its shuttering set in stone, the only remaining question is how to preserve its extensive library of anime. More than just footage, the archive is a tangible record of production history. Losing it all would be a major loss, historically and culturally. Tokyo Laboratory is a subsidiary of Toho. While not an animation studio, it has handled video editing, development, and archiving of anime since its founding in 1955. But after 67 years of service, it announced in November 2022 that it would finally be closing down amid restructuring in Toho. One unintended casualty, however, is its large stock of unclaimed master shots for all the anime it's worked on. In a tweet from the animation news site Katsuka, they lay out the situation saying, "Sad news! Japanese Tokyo Lab Company, which is archiving many anime since 1955, will close in November, and they'll have to destroy all the masters unclaimed by right holders." Wow. According to reports from websites like Anime News Network, there are some 20,000 masters not spoken for. Because of Tokyo Laboratory's extensive history working on all sorts of anime, this means that the stock could include some very rare material that still hasn't been remastered or re-released. The company's list of works it has worked on is a veritable A to Z of anime history, starting from Seven Ghosts to Zone of the Enders Idolo, which I'm not even familiar with. I know about Zone of the Enders, though, the games, anyway. If they are no longer stored and marked for destruction, it would mean the loss of some of the highest quality renderings of rare anime, regardless of whether their owners want them or not. Tokyo's laboratory closure happened in the face of changing technology, with film moving towards digital storage and distribution. Toho's restructure broke up Tokyo's laboratory duties and transferred them to new departments that will continue with a digital focus. Archival duties will also continue under the auspices of an all-new company. This transition to digital archival might also be why Toho is no longer willing to handle the 20,000 masters. Not to mention the expense they incur. The unclaimed material costs $40,000 a year to store. Nonetheless, destroying so much anime could lead to hidden gems being lost forever. Thankfully, Japan isn't blind to the problem. On his X account, politician Zenko Kurashita wrote about it. "Today we spoke with a person from the Tokyo Development Center. The company is aware of the historical value of the film masters, which are the crystallization of 68 years of activities, and they do not want to dispose of them," the translated post says. "With only 2 months left, time is limited to reach an agreement with Toho on what to do with the material. Hopefully the end of Tokyo Laboratory won't mean the same for its repository of production history of classic anime." Man. That really fucking sucks, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Like,
it'll lose stuff that some people hadn't seen in years and years.
Some stuff that people have never seen.
Yeah.
Interesting post from Washington Post here. "How often do men think about ancient Rome? Quite frequently, it seems. Men, do you think of Rome?
Sometimes.
I think a lot of people, I think a lot more men that are willing to talk about it think about Rome.
Well, you think about it. You know, it's on several of our favorite shows and games. Got God of the War.
Yeah.
Of course.
Well, that's doing, Greece.
That's doing in. Well, it, no, that's. Well, yeah. It is Greek. But Romans were just. They formed from that, basically. I say that. The two different sections, but a lot of the stuff. I think when Rome. Or, well, it wasn't called Rome before, but. I cannot think of the name they were called before that, but they came and conquered Greece, and then they became, you know, adopted the same gods, just gave them different names.
Right. It's been almost 2,000 years since the Roman Empire reached the historic peak of its power. Think about that. But many men still contemplate it. Quite a lot. A new social media trend prompting women to ask the men in their lives how often they think about ancient Rome reveals it crosses the minds of many men on a weekly basis, even daily or more, to the surprise and confusion of their loved ones. 3 times a day, answered one woman's fiancé in a TikTok video. There's so much to think about, he explained, eliciting a stunned look into the camera from his soon-to-be wife. They built an entire world-dominating society, another man exclaimed when asked by a bewildered-looking woman to justify why he contemplates ancient Rome. Actually, I was just having a conversation about their aqueducts and the fact that they had concrete that could harden. How the hell did you know that? Answered another person who said they think about ancient Rome at least once a day, in response to the question in a screenshot shared on TikTok. But why? Sure, the Roman Empire boasted a domination that stretched across the entire Middle Eastern basin and far beyond. It was a flourishing laboratory of works of art and engineering that continued to astound, and it operated under a political system that still forms the basis of many modern counterparts. At least that's what this reporter contemplates maybe once a fortnight. But why does there seem to be a gender divide in who is dreaming about ancient Rome today? According to historians, one explanation could be that Western societies have historically overemphasized the aspects of Roman history that are associated with masculinity in the popular imagination. The first thing that comes to mind is an image of the Roman legion, the imperial eagle, and that sort of military aspect, along with gladiators, which has a long association with masculinity and power. Hannah Cornwell, a historian of the ancient world at Britain's Birmingham University, said in a telephone interview on Thursday. Since at least the 19th century, she said, the historians have tended to view ancient Rome through the prism of politics and warfare, in part as a result of their reliance on elite masculine sources. That has informed popular culture, she said, and yet it's then missing out on so much. The slew of videos on TikTok appear to have been prompted by Arthur Hulu, a 32-year-old Roman reenactor and history influencer from Sweden who's earned a large following. Known as Gaius Flavius Online, where he posts videos of himself as a Roman legionnaire and performs comedy sketches as a gladiator, Hulu wrote on Instagram, "Ladies, many of you do not realize how often men think about the Roman Empire. You will be surprised by their answers." In an interview, Hulu said he posed the question after noticing a disparity between men and women in their interest in Roman history and seeing other creators discuss similar trends. Hulu's Roman Reenactment Society, for example, involves 16 men and 2 women. He said it's heavily male-dominated. The disparity in interest dates back hundreds of years, Hulu believes. The men during the Renaissance did it. The Founding Fathers also thought about the Roman Empire. Once you get enough exposure to the Roman Empire, whether it's the military stuff or the law, you start to see it everywhere, he said. I can't remember a day when I didn't think about the Roman Empire. It just fascinates me how different, but also how similar the Roman Empire is to our world today. And Gaius Flavius is not alone. One Reddit user, when prompted by his wife, said he thinks about the Roman Empire a few times a week. He said so many things in our lives were influenced by it, he explained in a post. Language, food, philosophy, architecture, war, entertainment, sports, mythology, culture. I don't actively focus on the Roman Empire, but the connection always pops into my head as I go about my daily life. Historians insist that Rome itself isn't just guy stuff, as some men in videos called it. Ancient Rome was, of course, patriarchal and violent, Lewis Webb, historian of ancient Rome at Oxford University, wrote in an email. but it was also a diverse place. There were numerous forms of masculinity. Women could have agency and power, and there were multiple gender expressions and identities, as well as various sexualities. I don't know about all that. Historian Cornwell...
Add that, but I've heard a thing debunking that, that it was basically about like kids today, very small part of population were gay.
Right.
All that, and then a large population were like, screw that shit.
Historian Cornwell also points out that Sextus Varius, Avitus Bassianus, are Elagabalus, the Roman Empire from AD, the Roman Emperor rather, from AD 218 to 222 is frequently present in ancient sources as experimenting with cross-dressing. Even when you get some of the emperors, they're doing weird and wacky things by modern conceptions of what a man is, Cornwell points out. There were also female gladiators. The Romans, they were fed to the lions. The Romans do have a clear sense of what is masculine and feminine, but within that, there is an awful lot of flexibility, which sometimes we often forget about, she said. And she herself, of course, thinks about the Roman Empire quite a lot, on a daily basis, as it is her chosen field. Her partner recently told her he thinks about it 1.6 times a month. So what is a healthy amount? Goodness, she said, laughing, I'd say it really depends on what you're thinking about. So that's an interesting little article. A lot of people don't realize how much we think about the Roman Empire.
Yeah. Well, that or Greek. I'd say it falls between the two.
It's quite a big deal.
Like Spartan. I mean, everyone after, especially after 300, everyone thinks about Spartan.
Oh, yeah.
Quite a bit. But, yeah, when I think of Greece, I think Spartan because I like.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, same here. Yeah.
Of course, you know, their hairstyle
didn't quite look Sparta! Like Sparta!
If you've seen the comic book, that's more accurate to their hairstyle of the time.
Yeah, I've read the comic. Former White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki made headlines with a controversial analogy comparing unborn babies to lumps of coal and broccoli. The comments came amidst a discussion on the rebranding of the pro-life movement. On her MSNBC show, she said, pro-life now becomes, in the words of Indiana Senator Todd Young, pro-baby. Pro-baby, I hate to break it to you, but if you call broccoli candy, it's still just broccoli. If you tie a really nice bow around a lump of coal, it is still coal under there.
Her head looks like the tip of a used tampon.
Psaki was referring to an NBC report that Democrats and affiliated organizations have voiced their concerns over Republicans' strategic move from pro-life rhetoric on abortion. The change comes in the wake of several electoral defeats for the GOP surrounding abortion. The comments were met with immediate backlash from pro-life advocates, and many have found the analogy to be in poor taste.
And if you notice, you know, the people that usually promote abortion don't ever have them themselves. Like, Jen Psaki has several kids. She had like two or three kids, I think. I know she has some kids. Hadn't had an abortion that I've heard of. You know, a lot of the famous people that are like, they should. Anne Hathaway was talking about abortion. She got kids. I ain't heard of her getting an abortion. Almost all of them that you're like, I support a woman's right to choose. She should be able to kill her baby if she wants to. They all got kids. No abortions that I know of. I mean, practice what you preach, bitch.
The last week, the head of a super PAC closely associated with Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell presented poll results indicating that voters' perceptions of terms like pro-life and pro-choice have evolved since the Supreme Court's decisions last year that overturned Roe v. Wade. The poll revealed that the term pro-life, which has been predominantly used by the anti-abortion movement for the past 5 decades, is no longer resonating with voters. Reactions. Colin Rugg, new, former White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki compares an unborn baby to a lump of coal as she tries dunking on pro-life Republicans. Pro-baby, okay. If you tie a really nice bow around a lump of coal, it's still coal under there. I'm just shocked that devout Catholic... They love calling things lumpy. First my pillows, now human beings. Sick. She's evil and lies about everything. Yes, she does. Aren't they all? Cold and disturbingly disconnected. A baby is murdered every 34 seconds in the United States, but the left wants to take away your guns due to a few shootings a year, which are largely due to the effects of pharmaceutical drugs and lack of mental institutions. They are not the good guys. That much is clear.
Yeah. Anything, if you think about anything the Democrats came out with here any time in the past few years, it has never benefited the person that it's directed towards. It more or less benefits the criminal. It's like, oh, thank God they don't have a gun now. Now I can use my gun on them and get what I want.
Pro star's wife reveals how... New York Post. Porn star's wife reveals how his job impacts their sex life. A woman who married a famous porn star has revealed her husband has taught her to be a better lover. Katie Bampton married adult content creator Robbie after just 4 months of dating. What? Admitting while she was initially put off by his line of work, her mindset has now completely shifted. Just because he's good for your hole doesn't mean he's good for your soul. The 30-year-old fully supports her husband's unusual job, which includes filming adult movies as well as educating men and women on how to improve their love lives. I knew what Robbie did before I met him because I'd seen him on Instagram, and it put me off a little bit, Katie said in a Scene TV interview. But after meeting Robbie, getting to know him, I'm so glad I did. I realized how much we have in common, and my perception really changed. It was a real baptism by fire for Katie, who explained her...
And that's talking about when she goes to pee.
Who explained her now husband, who goes by the screen name Robbie Oz, left their second date to go shoot a sex scene with another woman. We shared our first kiss at the beach, and then he went off to shoot the scene, and it just seemed so normal, she explained. Obviously, I had a little bit of, oh, is this happening? Is this real? But it really, really was. Since tying the knot last year, Katie said her way of thinking has evolved, with the pair who live on the Gold Coast engaging in ethical non-monogamy. Oh, of course. We'll see how long that lasts. I thought being in a relationship and sex was love, but I've grown to know that sex is a physical exchange between two people, she explained. I knew what Robbie did before I met him because I'd seen him on Instagram, and it put me off a little bit, Katie said in an interview. Bampton admits that while she was initially put off by his... we'll go into this. Our relationship is based on love, and we have so much in our relationship and plans for the future. Robbie and I have our special things that we have together, whereas when we're with someone else, it brings something spicy to the relationship. However, not everyone has been accepting of their open marriage, with friends and family suggesting Robbie should stop having sex with others, a point Katie denies. I married Robbie for who he is. The moment I met him, I knew he was something different, and we gelled. We connected from right at the start, she said. I couldn't be myself in previous relationships. I felt myself hiding myself and not being and not acting to my full potential. With Robbie, there was no judgment, and I could just be the Katie that I am. She added, I never thought I'd marry a porn star, but here we are. Sex with a porn star has taught me so much about myself. If anything came up and I felt insecure or jealous, I knew that would be an internal journey for myself. Robbie said he went into sex work after rebelling from his Jehovah's Witness upbringing at age 18 and finding himself in a polyamorous relationship with two women. From that point, I just kind of learned as much as I could, and I guess I was so interested in learning it took me down the path of teaching about sex, he explained. I'm so proud of my work. I think it's just stigma from older generations where people look down on it and think it's dirty. But to me, it's just like any other job. Now Katie has built a loyal social media following to encourage women to not be trapped in relationships that society expects. However, she said her social media presence has led to several misconceptions, including that their lifestyle involves sex and swingers parties 24/7. But that isn't the case. It's mostly work, friends, the beach, and spending time with each other, she said. And this just in, we got a new article here. There is life after death. Revive patients share out-of-body experiences in startling NYU report. It's not a deathbed myth. Our lives really do flash before our eyes when we die, according to a new report from the NYU Grossman School of Medicine. I remember seeing my dad, said one patient after flatlining. I caught glimpses of my... I caught glimpses of my life and felt pride, love, joy, and sadness all pouring into me. Recalled another after being pulled back from the brink. I do remember a being of light standing near me. It was looming over me like a great tower of strength, yet radiating only warmth and love, a third survivor shared. Give me just a second here, guys. And we'll get back to that. Okay. Okay, now that I've had that brief pause. I caught glimpses of my life and felt pride, love, joy, and sadness all pouring into me, recalled another after being pulled back from the brink. I do remember a being of light standing near me. It was looming over me like a great tower of strength, yet radiating only warmth and love, a third survivor shared. These and many other haunting recollections were described by cardiac arrest patients who underwent cardiopulmonary resuscitation as they hovered on death's doorstep. Typically, doctors have assumed there is little to no brain activity after about 10 minutes of cardiac arrest when the heart stops beating, depriving the brain of oxygen. However, the new research from the NYU turns that misconception on its head. There are signs of normal and near-normal brain activity found up to an hour into resuscitation, Dr. Sam Parney, an association professor of medicine, told the Post in a wide-ranging interview. We were not only able to show the markers of lucid consciousness, we were also able to show that these experiences are unique and universal. They're different from dreams, illusions, and delusions. Parnia is the lead author of a study published this week in the journal Resuscitation that studied brain activity and awareness among 53 patients who survived cardiac arrest in 25 hospitals, mostly in the US and UK. The researchers were able to show that the brain is surprisingly more durable than most doctors had previously believed. Our brain is very robust and more resilient to oxygen deprivation than expected, adding that the organ can restore itself and have markers of normal brain activity. Of the 53 surviving patients in the study, almost 40% reported having memories or conscious thoughts. Patients in the study asked that their identities not be revealed for privacy reasons. The patients also had spikes in the gamma, delta, theta, alpha, and beta brain waves as associated with higher mental function, as recorded by an electroencephalogram, a technology that records brain activity with electrodes. There is a narrative arc in people who are having a near-death experience, Parnia said of the common themes that survivors recalled. Their consciousness becomes heightened, vivid, and more sharp. One of the most common shared experiences among people who have been revived following cardiac arrest is a 360-degree awareness of space around them. In death, they have a perception that they are separate from their body and that they can move around. But they're in that hospital room and they're gathering information. They felt they were fully conscious. In that state of awareness, they're often observing doors and nurses working to save their lives, but their observation is completely placid and free of fear and distress. And yes, many people actually do see their lives pass before their eyes, much like in stories from folklore and popular media. Somehow in death, their entire life comes to the fore, said Parnia. It's a deep, purposeful, and meaningful reevaluation of their lives. The review of our lives isn't in any particular order, more of a dive into morality and ethics. It's not a chronology. It's a purposeful reevaluation of the things that we strive for in life, like a promotion at work. What becomes a primary reality is how we treat other people, added Parnia, who is director of critical care and resuscitation research at NYU. It's not random flashbacks. There's so much more. Another common theme of the sense is the sense of arriving in a place that feels utterly familiar, home, somewhere that they feel they recognize they're going back to. They continue on the rest of this journey to a place that they feel is home, Parnia said. What's interesting is that this is universal in the U.S. and other countries. Science doesn't fully understand how or why these common experiences occur, but Parnia believes the brain's normal operating focus, which gets us through the day, becomes relaxed and disinhibited during near-death experiences. Normally, they are all braking systems that keep us from accessing all aspects of our brain. The rest of the functions of your brain are dampened. Okay, well, that's what he says there. So that's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, y'all atheists might want to rethink that one. Never know. I'll tell you one thing. Your body doesn't do that on its own, I don't imagine.
Right.
I've been watching a guy debates atheists. Is really good at proving points of existence of a creator and all that. It's really interesting. It's Frank Turch or something. I have to look it up. He got a book out. It's called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist or something like that. It's supposed to be a really good book. I'm going to eventually order it. But
yeah, well, I think that's... Eh. Let's see. I think that... Well, hold on. Yeah, I think we can maybe do another article. How about this?
It kind of looked like a Rick and Morty.
It's a really good game. Big Boy Boxing.
Big Boy Boxing. Mm-hmm,
that's a really... This is a really good one, though. Because what happens is... Yeah, you watch the fight. Something's going to happen. I really like this. I think it's a Punch-Out successor. Watch. You're going to... Eventually, you'll... I think it'll show it. Like, let's see. Because I know you don't all the way... Okay, yeah. See, you'll knock him out. Yeah, see, you knock his hat off. And then everybody laughs at him. And something happens. Uh-oh. Ice cold killer. Now, he's not so hard, but Mr. Adulty Man is very tough, and I could not beat him. By the way, this game is free on Itch, just to download for the demo. So, definitely worth checking out. It's one of my favorite games so far from the Sage.
Yeah.
Which is where all these games are coming from. These are a lot, you know, from the Sage. What sucks is all these games are pretty much made in Unity, and since Unity did its shit, which I should talk about, the Unity situation and the Fables situation.
Yeah.
Let's see. Okay, but let's go ahead and get started with the next part of it. Sorry guys for the pauses here. I've got some things going on, you know, messages and stuff. But yeah, let's go ahead and get to this. Let's see here. Chuck Schumer, we're not going to do a whole article on this. Chuck Schumer says he asked Musk and Gates and others about Reddit to regulate AI. Every single person raised their hands. The nation's biggest technology executives on Wednesday loosely endorsed the idea of government regulations for artificial intelligence at an unusual
close. Government should have shit to do with it.
Let me read it. At an unusual closed-door meeting in the U.S. Senate. But there is little consensus on what regulation would look like. They have no fucking clue, and that's where I agree with you. And the political path for legislation is difficult. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, who organized a private forum on Capitol Hill as part of a push to legislate artificial intelligence, not good, said he asked everyone in the room, including almost 24 tech executives, advocates, and skeptics, whether government should have a role in the oversight of artificial intelligence, and every single person raised their hands, even though they had diverse views, he said. Among the ideas discussed was whether there should be an independent agency to oversee certain aspects of the rapidly developing technology, how companies could be more transparent, and how the United States should stay ahead of China and other countries. The key point was really that it's important for us to have a referee, said Elon Musk, CEO of Tesla and X, during a break in the day-long forum. It was a very civilized discussion, actually among some of the smartest people in the world. Schumer will not necessarily take the tech executive's advice. He works with colleagues on the politically difficult task of ensuring some oversight of the burgeoning sector. But he invited them to the meeting in hopes that they would give senators some realistic direction for meaningful regulation. Congress should do what it can to maximize AI's benefits and minimize the negatives, Schumer said, whether that's enshrining bias or the loss of jobs or even the kind of doomsday scenarios that were mentioned in the room. And only government can be there to put in guardrails. That's bullshit. However, other executives attending the meeting were Meta's Mark Zuckerberg, former Microsoft CEO Bill Gates, and Google CEO Sundar Pichai. Musk said that the meeting might go down in history as being very important for the future of civilization. First, though, lawmakers have to agree on whether to regulate and how. They don't even know. They don't even really know.
They don't need to mess with it right now. There's no reason to. We don't have the technology for it to do a whole lot. I mean, eventually that might, but they don't need to be regulating. And I mean, Elon Musk and them, they know stuff about it. They could probably have some insight, but I've seen them try to do gun regulation, which I think should never happen. But when you listen to them talk about what they describe guns as, it is laughable. They are the dumbest pieces of shit to ever think of how a gun works. I'm sorry. Yeah, they don't need to have nothing to do with anything that involves intelligence. Or basic common knowledge. Just go shoot a fucking gun. Don't be a bitch.
Right, exactly. I agree with you.
That'd be my political campaign slogan. Go shoot a gun. Don't be a bitch. Vote DP 20.
Right. 36.
Some people say they're trans. I call them a dick in a dress. DP 2036. I got a million of them.
Did you say what? 2036?
Yeah, I'm not doing the math.
Holy shit. Yeah. Okay, so. I mean, really, I don't think I have to talk about the Unreal situation. Only thing I know is that devs are dropping it like it's hot because it is. Unfortunately, the game, yeah, this one's being made in Unity. I don't know if they're just going to move their shit over because I talked to a dev about that and he said that's not exactly easy. He tried to explain it in the most simple way. But basically, the call functions are different. So you might be able to bring your assets over, but it's a whole different ball game. And some skills do transfer over. He says, you know, if you're really skilled in one engine, you can probably understand another. So there's a very good chance that this game may move over to Godot or Unreal or some other engine. But Unity itself is probably going to just go completely broke. They fucked themselves. And it's not that they did the price change thing. It's the fact that they are so quick to change their terms. They changed their terms, like, in a split second. And people are like, okay, now we can't trust you. Because, you know, you threw this out of nowhere. So even if you do walk it back, we can't trust you. You know, it's a really easy engine for people to make games. It's probably one of the best engines that came out. And they fucked everybody. They fucked thousands of developers. They're basically saying, oh, if you're not in the 10% of developers, it won't hurt you. And they're like, okay, then why punish people's success? Why do you want to say, oh, if you're not making over $200,000, it's no big deal. And they're like, okay, so now I don't want to make $200,000 with my game, because if it does, then I'll have to pay you, what was it, 20 cents per install?
Yeah.
You might not think that's much, but think about it.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
It adds up.
That adds up a lot. And they're talking about every install and unique installs. I don't know. They were doing it per install. And people are like, okay, fuck this. I'm going to take every game that's got some shitty woke stuff, and I'm going to install and uninstall it 5,000 times. And every time I uninstall it, they're going to charge the damn company and bankrupt the company.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah.
They can do that! Yeah. They can actually make bots to do that!
Yeah.
So we've got a very interesting thing that happened. Bill Willingham, the creator of Fables, has sent his entire comic book into the public domain. His entire world, everything that he created. He wasn't going to sue DC. And he says, very briefly, when I first signed my creator-owned publishing contract with DC, the company was run by honest men and women of integrity, who for the most part interpreted the details of that agreement fairly and above board. When problems inevitably came up, we worked it out, like reasonable men and women. Since then, over the span of 20 years or so, those people have left or been fired to be replaced by a revolving door of strangers of no measurable integrity who now choose to interpret every facet of our contract in ways that only benefit DC Comics and its owner companies. At one time, the Fables properties were in good hands, and now by virtue of attrition and employee replacement, the Fables properties have fallen into bad hands. Since I can't afford to sue DC... to force him to live up to the letter and the spirit of our long-time agreement, since even winning such a suit would take ridiculous amounts of money out of my pocket and years out of my life, I'm 67 years old and don't have the years to spare, I've decided to take a different approach and fight them in a different arena, inspired by the principles of asymmetric warfare. The one thing in our contract the DC lawyers can't contest or reinterpret to their own benefit is that I am the sole owner of the intellectual property. I can sell it or give it away to whomever I want. I chose to give it away to everyone. I couldn't prevent Fables from falling into If I can't prevent Fables from falling into bad hands, at least this is a way I can arrange that it also falls into many good hands. Since I truly believe there are still more good people in the world than bad ones, I count it as a form of victory. So what has DC done to provoke this? Too many things to list exhaustively, but here are some highlights. Throughout the years of my business relationship with DC, with Fables and with other intellectual properties, DC has always been in violation of their agreements with me. Usually it's in smaller matters like forgetting to seek my opinion on artists for new stories or for covers or for formats of new collections and such. In those times when called on it, they automatically said, sorry, we overlooked you again. It just fell through the cracks. They used the fell through the cracks line so often and so reflexively that I eventually had to bar them from using it ever again. They are often late reporting royalties, and often underreport said royalties, forcing me to go after them to pay the rest of what's owed. Yeah, DC are fucking shit. If you're buying comics, DP, make sure you always buy them through, like, second party. Like, third part, like, outlets. Yeah, because you just can't trust them anymore. Same thing with Marvel. You can't really trust these companies. Lately, though, their practices have grown beyond these mere annoyances, prompting some sort of shutdown. First, they tried to strong-arm the ownership of Fables from me. When Mark Doyle and Dan Didio first approached me with the idea of bringing Fables back for its 20th anniversary, both gentlemen since fired from DC, during the contract negotiations for the new issues, their legal negotiators tried to make it a condition of the deal that the work be done as work for hire. Effectively throwing the property irrevocably into the hands of DC. When that didn't work, their excuse was, sorry, we didn't read your contract going into these negotiations. We thought we owned it. No. That's some bad shit. More recently, During talks to try to work out our many differences, DC officers admitted that their interpretation of our publishing agreement and the following media rights agreement is that they could do whatever they wanted with the property. They could change stories or characters in any way they wanted. They had no obligation whatsoever to protect the integrity and value of the IP, either from themselves or from third parties. Telltale Games, for instance. Oh, wow! Who want to radically alter the character's settings, history, and premises of the story. I've seen the script they tried to hide from me for a couple of years. Nor did they owe me any money for licensing the Fable's rights to third parties, since such a license wasn't anticipated in our original publishing agreement. When they capitulated on some of the points in a later conference call, promising on the phone to pay me back money's own for licensing Fables to Telltale Games, for example, in the execution of the new agreement, they reneged on their word and offered the promised amount instead as a consulting fee, which avoided the precedent of admitting that this was money owed and included a non-disclosure agreement that would prevent me from saying anything but nice things about Telltale or the license. See, that just brings things into perspective. How many of these fucking creators are under NDAs to not say anything but nice things about stuff that gets adapted from their property?
Yeah.
You gotta wonder.
I don't think...
You gotta wonder, does...
It sucks. You think about, what, the Fantastic Four movie that Stan Lee made sure never saw the light of day? Because it sucked so bad.
I like that one.
I don't know, but they thought it wasn't going to... A wrong reaction, so they made sure it didn't happen.
I saw it, and I liked it. But I will say... think about Garth Ennis. Garth Ennis licensed The Boys, and he licensed Preacher. And all that. And I'm sure they turned it... I know that they worked with him. But he was probably not happy with everything that they did. So, you gotta think about that. There's probably a couple things he's like, well, I don't really like what they're doing, but I can't say it because I'm under NDA not to say anything. And there's probably a lot of other creations that have been adapted that the creators are like, you know what? This sucks, but I can't tell you because I'm under NDA not to say anything. You gotta wonder how many... I mean, he just broke his NDA and he doesn't give a shit. And so on. And I think it's because he's getting older and he knows he probably doesn't have that much time left, so he's gotta do something. And he'd rather do something right. And so on. There's so much more. But these, as I said, are some of the highlights. At that point, since I disagreed on all their new interpretations of our long-standing agreements, we were in conflict. They practically dared me to sue them to enforce my rights, knowing it would be a long and debilitating process. Instead, I began to consider other ways to go. Are you concerned at what DC will do now? No. I gave them years to do the right thing. I tried to reason with them, but you can't reason with the unreasonable. They used these years to make soothing promises, tell lies about how dedicated they were towards working this out, and keep dragging things out as long as possible. I gave them the opportunity to renegotiate the contracts from the ground up, putting everything in unambiguous language, and they ignored that offer. I gave them the opportunity twice to simply tear up our contracts, and we each go our separate ways, and they ignored those offers. I tried to go over their heads to deal directly with their new corporate masters, and maybe find someone willing to deal in good faith, and they blocked all attempts to do so. Try getting any officer of DC Comics to identify who they report to up the company ladder. I dare you. In any case, without giving them details, I warned them months in advance that this moment was coming. I told them what I was about to do would be both legal and ethical. Now it's happened. Note that my contracts with DC are still in force. I did nothing to break them, and I cannot unilaterally end them. I still can't publish Fables comics through anyone but them. I still can't authorize a Fables movie through anyone but them. Nor can I license Fables toys, nor lunchboxes, nor anything else. And they still have to pay me for the books they publish, and I'm not giving up on the other money they owe. One way or another, I intend to get my 50% of the money they've owed me for the years, for the Telltale game, and other things. However, you, the new 100% owner of Fables, never signed such agreements. For better or worse, DC and I are still locked together in this unhappy marriage, perhaps for all time. But you aren't. I understand the law correctly, and be advised that copyright law is a mess, purposely vague and murky, and no two lawyers, not even those specializing in copyright and trademark law, agree on anything. You have the rights to make your own Fables movies and cartoons and publish your Fables books and manufacture your Fables toys and do anything you want with your property because it's your property. Mark Buckingham is free to do his version of Fables, and I dearly hope he does. Steve Lealoha is free to do his version of Fables, which I'd love to see, and so on. You don't have to get my permission, but you might get my blessing, depending on your plans. You don't have to get DC's permission, or the permission of anyone else. You never signed the same agreements I did with DC Comics. It was my absolute joy and pleasure to bring you Fables stories for the past 20 years. I look forward to seeing what you do with it. For further questions, you can contact me at blah blah blah. Please include Fables public domain so I don't assume you're another Netflix promotion. So, he did it. Bill Willingham gave all the characters and everything in the public domain. Me and DP can make our own Fables comic right now if we want to.
Yeah.
And, Fables is a good comic series. But you know what we will do? We will stop doing DC properties on my channel. After The Invisibles, as I have announced, I'm done with DC properties. I'm done with Marvel properties. The only properties I will offer from DC or Marvel is if they're bought back properties by companies like Dynamite, IDW, smaller companies, smaller publishers. I only want to deal with smaller publishers on Grimm's Comics Corner. I don't want to promote, and I also want to work with independent, smaller people. I don't have the money to buy your comics. Like, you're trying to tell me, oh, you can support our Indiegogo. Like, dude, I would rather just get, like, a bundle of comics from Humble or from, you know, Fanatical or something like that. Those are great. I can read those. Like, I'm not saying everybody can do that. But, you know, those who can, I'd appreciate that. There's also smaller labels like Marcosia. There's stuff from Humanoids we could do. There's all kinds of different comic books that we can work with. There's Image that we can work with. We're still going to do Spawn. I've got no problem with Todd McFarlane and his people. Yeah, sure, they have some woke stuff there, but we won't be covering that unless you want me to bring the Cringe Comic Corner back. I can do a few of those. They didn't do well on YouTube, so I didn't fucking decide I wanted to do any more of them. YouTube doesn't want them, and you guys, obviously, here in BitChute and MGTOW TV, you guys don't fucking want them, so why am I wasting my time? I can do comics you guys actually like. We can go back with Chaos Comics, which are now defunct. You know, Dynamite had some say with that. Not going to get into that issue. But, you know, it is what it is. And we will continue to just promote all these comics and work with all these, you know, different things that we do. And, of course, I'll do that once a week because our main primary focus is, as it always has been, it's visual novels and AVNs and commentary, rants and all that. So, I think that's all we have to talk about today. Thank you guys for hanging out with us. Don't know why that stuck on the... I guess maybe it was done. I don't know. But at any rate, this is the Grim Lord, and I will see you guys next time on the Grim Rant Show, and we'll have some more stuff to rant about. Later. Enjoy the decline.